Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You are listening to us live on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For those people that might be slightly unfamiliar with my voice, my name is Peter Mingles. We host this whole thing. We started it back towards the tail end of 2012, beginning part of 2013. I wanted a platform where we can actually showcase people doing the right things in home-based businesses. So we've been doing that for a real long time. We have a lot of radio shows. I am one of those guys that really wants to tell you the whole stuff about what's happening in the industry, because if you're doing something with the industry, I think you need to know the whole industry. So I don't mind talking to the critics, because the critics have the same concerns that I do relative to what happens in this industry as well. And I did a radio show for a gentleman whose name is Roger Van Vlissingen, who's a really smart guy, who was critical about MLM. And when we did our radio show, it just happened to be around this time 5 years ago, and when we did that radio show, it was just when Vima was shut down by the FTC temporarily, and Bill Ackman, the hedge fund manager, was in a conflict, if you will, with what was going on with Herbalife, and he was shorting the stock, and there was a lot of really good stuff going on, and a lot of allegations going back and forth. So Scott Johnson called me up, and he said, listen, I heard that radio show, but there's something that you guys aren't talking about. And I said, what's that, Scott? And he said, the tool scam in MLM. Now, I had been associated with MLM before, and specifically the Amway MLM, and I know the right word would be to recruit myself, but I hired and fired myself 3 times because of the tool scam. I saw that those people, you know, I even came up with a term. You make money in the business, and then you make money on the business. I could see that they were making money on the business by selling their cassettes and having me come to their meetings and blah, 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 buy their books. And their focus just seemed to be too much on the tools. So I fired myself the first time, joined again. Maybe I figured I joined the wrong group, fired myself the second time. By the third time, I told the guy, listen, you guys make more money on these books and these tapes. No, it's not like that at all. I said, I know that's what's going on. I'm not going to join the company. No, that's not the way it is. Basically, I won't say he lied, but he didn't tell me the truth. So I'm going to say, ultimately, he lied. So when I found out that he lied, even though he told me that he wasn't, I wound up quitting again. Well, so I thought I had a handle on what Scott was going to talk about with the tool scam. And then I knew what Scott was going to talk about with the tool scam, because I said, do you have a website? And he said, sure do. And by the way, you might want to write this down. It's stoptheamwaytoolscam.wordpress.com. So with that domain name, I knew that I was talking about the same thing that he was talking about, or he was talking about the same thing I was talking about. So we said, yeah, let's do a couple of radio shows, Scott. What I did not realize is that Scott's into this stuff. I mean, like, really into this stuff. He is the expert on tools, hands down. Not even a contest. There's not even a close second place. I don't even know if there's a second place in that. He's done more research on tools than anybody else that I know. But he's also a really good expert on this industry. So he follows it and helps other people as well. And I totally enjoy this show. Although some people might say, well, it's a critical to MLM show. It's critical to MLM when done wrong show. If it's done right, there's retail sales and, you know, there's a big focus on selling, and of course there has to be a big focus on recruiting as well when it's done the right way. But the bottom line is that Scott and I have opened up lots of conversations with many different people inside this industry, outside this industry, to be able to help you, if you're listening, get a better handle on what's going on so you can make your own decisions. Here's the way I look at it. You're an adult. You get a chance to make your own decisions. You live and die by them. If you want to do something, you do it. But at least we give a chance to educate you on what's going on. And this way you can provide yourself the backdrop where you're not going to be scammed unless you put yourself in a position to be scammed. There's the triple G's, the goofy, the gullible, and the greedy. If you fall into those, you know, you're not going to listen to us. But if you are those people that are really looking for some of the right answers or stuff like that, tune into this and other radio shows that we've done. Sometimes we have guests. Sometimes we do it ourselves. Tonight, we're going to be doing it ourselves. So I want to introduce you to Scott Johnson. Scott Johnson, thanks for being here.
Hey, Peter. Good evening. Thanks for having me. I can certainly tell it's getting later in the year. It's getting darker out there on your FlaglerBeach.tv Critter Cam website. And we were talking just briefly before the show started. You have a new occupier of your backyard, a little Jeep, and I can see three raccoons. It has not deterred them at all, although they're looking around for the food.
They are looking for food. I'm going to do this while we're doing the show. I feel bad. I got, like, my little natural pets out there. So I'm going to start to feed them. I'm going
to
be myself out.
You want me to talk for a couple minutes?
Yeah, you talk. Yeah, of course. I got my priorities, Scott. We got to feed those little critters. They're wondering where this stuff is.
Yeah,
so I'm going to mute myself
the water, out. Missing the food.
Yeah, I had to move it around. We'll talk about that in a second. Here we go.
Okay. Well, again, thanks for having me. And for those who don't know this, Peter's got a website called FlaglerBeach.tv, and in the upper right-hand corner, there's a camera called Critter Cam, and he plays that 24/7. And this time of evening, the critters come around, and I can see, I think, four raccoons right now, as well as some lightning in the background. In fact, there's a raccoon walking right up to the dish. Uh-oh, I think Peter just walked out. But let me get back to the theme of the show, which is MLM scams. And Peter and I are very much aligned. Both of us believe that MLM is, in my opinion, it's a brilliant business model. The problem is it's not being implemented correctly by almost every MLM that I can see. And I'm sure there's probably exceptions. I certainly haven't studied all of them. It's kind of impossible to do that. And MLMs are very well known for lying, in my opinion. And so it's really hard just to read something and take their word for it and, you know, kind of go from there, because I know that Amway lied to me multiple times about different things. And when I say Amway, I'm talking about both the corporation and the upline. They both lie. And so you really can't believe anything they say. You really have to go confirm it for yourself. And fortunately, we have the internet, and you can go do your own research. And certainly, my websites are a tool to do that. And I would not tell anybody to just believe what's on my website. Go check it out. Go verify it. Go see that it's got different references on there. It's not just me making statements. It's really a solid referenced website. So I've got three of them, actually. There's stoptheamwaytoolscam.wordpress.com, which is mostly about Amway. There's a little bit of other MLMs in there. Another one is based in the UK, the United Kingdom, and that is ukamwayblog.wordpress.com. And that's a very interesting website, because back in 2007 or 8 time frame is when the equivalent of the FTC in England decided they wanted to kick Amway out of the country. Now, the judge decided to let them stay in just by in fact, I think his exact term was a thin margin or something along those lines. So they were able to stay in, but they had to make a number of concessions. There was things like you can't make any money on the tools. There was things like you have to have retail sales before you can sponsor another distributor and other things. But those are the two most significant things. They also had to report numbers on an annual basis, which is really the focus of that website, is those numbers. So you can see what's actually going on in the Amway business in the UK. And it's basically cratering. They just can't run a clean business, in my opinion. That's just the way it is. And then the third website I have is allmlmfacts.org. And that's got all kinds of different MLMs and so forth discussed on there. So I'm going to see if Peter's back. Are you back, Peter? I guess not. I'll just keep talking.
Peter is. Peter's right here.
Oh, Peter is there. Okay.
Yep. All right. If you don't mind, you're going to hear me
back,
chomping.
Peter.
you're going to hear a little bit of background noise because I have a smorgasbord that I treat these little animals with. So just a little bit of backdrop, if you look at my background and if you look at my backyard, you'll see my Jeep, which is not normal. We had a new roof installed or re-roofed, you know, when they take all the shingles off and they put another one on. And I had to clear out the driveway because they got all this stuff, you know, like the dumpster and stuff like that. So as a result of that, everybody's been a little bit turned upside down as far as their time frame and everything. So I'm just kind of making it up to the little raccoons because they've had to deal with shingles on the floor and all that sort of stuff. And I'm just kind of making up to them. So what you hear me chopping, I buy carrots because I think they like carrots, and I get some potatoes, and I get a 50-pound thing of dog food, and between all of those, we kind of treat the animals in the backyard to some cool stuff, so you could see it on the critter cam. And mostly I did it because when Scarlett was here, Scarlett's my granddaughter, we used to do stuff like this, and I just kind of keep doing it because the raccoons got used to it, and I'm probably feeding some of them. And Scott, if you take a look at the on the critter cam, you'll see probably my raccoons in the backyard are pretty healthy.
Very healthy.
They are very healthy, and I could be maybe just, you know, they would make somebody good raccoon soup, that's for sure. I could make probably, Scott, we've had, what, 6 or 7 of them in the backyard at the same time, so we could probably make a coat if we wanted to. Yeah, so anyway.
Yes.
Trying to do my little thing to keep them alive. So go ahead. You're going to hear a little bit of chopping. Yep.
Yeah, that's fine. And I was just going to say, Jed Clampett would be right at home there with the raccoons in the backyard.
He would be. Yep. Yeah. So anyway, so I did some stupid stuff with my Jeep too. So for those people that are wondering,
and they have migrated back into the backyard, Peter. They're back in the backyard, but
they're in there already, right? Yeah,
only,
probably much. Yeah.
There's only water there right now, so they're still looking around for the food that you're chopping.
Oh, they got
up.
The dog food is on the floor. Yeah, the dog food is on the floor. I put the dog food out first.
Oh, it is.
Now I'm just doing like a smorgasbord. They're getting their vegetables with their meat or protein or whatever's in the dog food. So anyway, so that's what I'm doing now. So sorry for everybody the background noise, but you know, you got your priorities. So I usually get this stuff done. I had to go to the store to get some paint so I can do some stuff for tomorrow. So anyway, so you're probably going to see them taken off when I get out there. And I think, Scott, you see it probably a 20-second delay. So whatever.
Yes.
Whatever I'm doing, you're going to see.
I think I just turned the door open, but they're still milling about. So
right.
Within a few seconds, I'm sure they're going to scurry off.
Yeah. There we go. So check them out, flaglerbeach.tv. And by the way, the one of the other neat things about what I did over there was we have a live camera on Flagler Beach. So during the day, if you ever want to see what Flagler Beach looks like, you'll be able to do that. So it's pretty cool. Okay, so we got animals fed. We're ready to roll. So go ahead, Scott. Sorry for the interruption and everybody else listening in. You get a glimpse of what it's like to be me. There we go.
Yeah, I was just going to mention, too, the lightning in the background is real pretty, too. Peter, it looks like you got some showers earlier because the beach camera, it looks like there's some puddles, you know, in the street.
Oh, wow. Yep. Okay, so I'm here ready to roll.
All right. Well, sounds good. I just kind of reviewed my websites, so I guess we can just rip into the past week, actually week's events, because we've had guests on pretty consistently here. I think I got all the way back to, like, page 7 of BehindMLM.com before I noticed some stories that I think we have covered before. So, in fact, we could probably cover the whole show with just one coin. There's seven stories just on one coin. But I guess we could just jump into that and, go from there.
There's
so for people that don't know, we look at BehindMLM.com anytime we don't have guests on, really, because these guys keep up with what's going on in the MLM world, new stories and new developments of existing stories, and they just do a really good job. So we found this to be a great resource. We don't always agree with their analysis of what's going on, but certainly the information they provide is very, very good. So I would definitely recommend that to anyone that wants to know more about the MLM industry. and especially the current events. And in the upper right-hand corner, there's a little, you know, magnifying glass, and you can put in a company name, a person's name, you know, pretty much anything you want, and it'll do a search on that site for anything that's related to that. So it's a really good resource, you know, in a different number of ways. So the first story here that I see is August 8, 2020, and the headline is OneCoin Lawyers Bullied UK Authorities into Cowardice. So, and this might have some truth to it. It's hard to tell for sure, but we have noticed the UK, you know, goes out there and makes an announcement, and then they end up backing off. We know we've seen that before. They actually kind of did that with Amway back in 2007 or 8 when the equivalent of the FTC in the UK went after Amway. They were really trying to kick them out of the country. And the judge said, by a fine margin, I will let them stay in the country. And so, you know, the judge was right on the edge of, should I kick them out or let them stay in? And he said they made so many concessions that, you know, I'm going to give them another chance. So, but this story about OneCoin, it was interesting because there was a warning up on the, they call it the FCA, Financial Conduct Authority, and they put a warning up there, which I believe, like most regulators, hardly anybody saw. So it was kind of a wasted effort anyway. If you're really trying to notify the masses, just having it on an obscure regulatory website is just not going to do it. But then after a few months, it came down. And the accusation here is that the OneCoin lawyers intimidated these guys and they took it down. So, you know, who knows? And, of course, the regulators aren't really commenting on it. So there's not much really to that story unless you saw something else in there, Peter.
No, but the thing, just talk about OneCoin for a second. The cryptocurrency world is very, 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 very familiar with OneCoin. So there, it's not just the MLM world, because the cryptocurrency world gets beaten up all the time because OneCoin considered themselves to be a cryptocurrency. So not that you guys, some of you may follow cryptocurrency, but I follow this one gentleman. His name is Ivan, and he's got a channel called Ivan on Tech. So Ivan, I-V-A-N, on Tech. And if you go to YouTube, you can listen to his channel. He's from Sweden. He talks with a very interesting accent. He's kind of fun to listen to. He's very knowledgeable. But they talk about OneCoin quite often. So the cryptocurrency community is very knowledgeable about OneCoin. The challenge is OneCoin was, I'm not even going to say allegedly, connected to the equivalent of the mafia. And seriously, like, there was so much money probably going through illegal operations. And I'm not just talking about goofy people illegal. I'm talking about ruthless people that if they wanted to silence somebody, they probably could, because they don't necessarily play fair. And we still haven't heard from Dr. Ruja, and maybe there's a reason why we haven't heard from Dr. Ruja. Maybe she's still not on this planet. We don't know. Or who knows what might be going on, but it wouldn't be totally out of the question for her to meet a similar fate of Jeffrey Epstein. So there's real serious corruption and that kind of a situation going on. So the idea that some authorities from the UK backed off may not be as surprising as it might seem. So anyway, so back to you, Scott.
Yeah, I think the other cryptocurrency companies really viewed OneCoin as really giving them a bad reputation, you know, the whole industry. And so they've been beating them up ever since they really found out about them, I believe, just because of, you know, giving the rest of the cryptocurrency just a bad, you know, reputation overall. So, and we're going to talk about OneCoin a few more times here during the show, because there are several stories of updates. That happened to be the latest one. But another one here that we've followed a little bit in the past, another August 8th, 2020 story, FTC files for summary judgment against Cardiff's. So these are the people that are running a couple companies. One of them is Rengalife, the other one is Redwood Scientific Technologies. And it's been just going back and forth. I mean, it's just been, you know, the judge gives an order, they don't follow it. The judge gives another order, they don't follow it. The FTC complains. The judge, you know, says, yeah, you're right, but I'm not going to do anything. And it's just been going back and forth for literally several months. And finally, it looks like it's towards the end to where, you know, the judge is losing his patience. I think by the end of August, I think that's the date. There's another story somewhere down the page here that talks about that. But I think by the end of August, the judge is requiring them to produce certain documents. And if they don't, he's going to put him in jail. That's, you know, that's the latest update on that. But now the FTC said, look, judge, all these different, I think there's like 400 filings in this case. And the FTC is saying they haven't pushed back one iota on anything that we've accused them of. And so we want summary judgment. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but my personal opinion is the judge is not going to do that because, you know, you're not required to plead your case before the trial. And so I don't think the judge is going to give the FTC a summary judgment. I think he's going to let it go to trial or let them plead guilty or something beyond a summary judgment. But that's just my opinion. We'll see how it goes. Anything more on that one, Peter?
No, but they've been in a world of hurt for a real long time. I don't know anything about these people except for what we read, which is always dangerous, Scott, right? Because you never always can trust what we read. But they've been in and out of trouble for a long time. And recently he tried to, I think, pull off a miracle by turning his factory into making PPE, the personal protection equipment, or selling some stuff for PPE. And they kiboshed him. They're not giving him any level of flexibility. So the noose is tightening on this guy. And if he's not careful, he could wind up in jail, him and his wife. I think they've already lost their house. I know they've already lost their business. And he could lose a lot more, including his freedom, if he doesn't play it the right way.
Yeah, and the issue with those masks that he was producing for the coronavirus is that he was under court order to report any kind of financial transactions to the court. And so he violated a direct court order, you know, related to this case. And again, the judge, you know, said you can't do that, but he didn't really do anything beyond that. So, you know, a couple months back, we made the comment that, man, the FTC isn't doing much about this either. But then finally the FTC did say, hey, this has just been going on too long and, you know, judge, you got to do something. You can't, you know, we can't do this forever. You know, we understand being patient and giving these guys their day in court, but, you know, when there's this obvious just non-compliance and non-cooperation, you know, at some point you just have to put your foot down. And I think the judge did. I think the end of August date is going to be set in stone, and we'll just wait until the end of the month to see what happens there. Any other comments, Peter?
No, but they will wind up putting this guy in jail for contempt or something like that if he doesn't follow up with his paperwork. You can't just blow the judge off. If the judge wants paperwork or whatever, the court wants documentation, not sending them is not – it's just going to piss somebody off and they're going to put him in jail. Back to you.
Yeah, because, you know, normally the FTC can't put people in jail. However – somebody is found in contempt of court, such as not producing documents before trial, or, you know, maybe not following the rules after the trial, you know, following the decision, then they can be put in prison. So that's a very real possibility here. The next one, I don't think this is a really big story, but it's kind of an old name in the industry, so I thought I'd bring it up. It's an August 7th, 2020 story. And it's the headline is Noni by New Age Review, Mirinda Autoship carries over. So Noni, and in fact it was called Tahitian Noni, was an older company that was then renamed to be Noni by New Age, I think. And and somewhere in there, they changed their name to Miranda also. They just like changing their name, I guess. Probably this, probably because of a bad reputation again. And hey, let's just change our name so that people can't just Google us or go to behindmlm.com or wherever and find out that, we're not doing things right. So that's always my explanation for changing names. I mean, companies do that from time to time, non-MLM companies, but it's pretty unusual. The only one I can think of, well, there's been actually quite a few utilities that have done that over the years as they, try to modernize and they buy up new utilities, other utilities, and they form a larger one. That's not real uncommon. And then, of course, there's the old, if you remember, Peter, I think you're old enough to remember Datsun.
Yep.
Remember Datsun? That was the old name for Nissan. It was Datsun only in the United States, and then Nissan years ago decided we're going to make it Nissan worldwide, so we're going to drop the Datsun name. But that wasn't none of those are anything to do with reputation. It was more just for, market alignment and that kind of thing. I don't think most MLMs change their name for much of a reason other than to try to get, try to get all the bad publicity put aside, at least temporarily, until someone like this writes an article saying, oh yeah, this company used to be known as this company. So, it's kind of a fruitless venture in a lot of ways. Anything more on that one?
Nope, that's it. There's a similar issue with merges, if you want to talk about Rx, and because you said something about New Age.
Yes, and that's the word we're going to get to in a little bit, so thanks for reminding me. I will definitely cover that. So I think it's a little bit further down this page or the next page. That's another very interesting story. But let's go back to OneCoin real quick. August 7th, 2020, as I work my way down the page here, Konstantin Ignatov dismissed from OneCoin class action. So, he's already been prosecuted criminally, and then apparently he was being prosecuted civilly, in a class action lawsuit. And basically what they said is, hey, you cooperated with the feds. If you cooperate with us, we'll take you off of the class action lawsuit. And, of course, he's probably broke anyway, so, there's nothing to go after there. It's probably another reason they did that. But basically they said, if you cooperate with us, like you've been cooperating with the feds, and by the way, part of the agreement is the feds are able to be present when the class action lawyers are talking to him, to make sure that they get the straight story, the same story that he told the feds, and there's not some funny business going on, then we'll drop you from the class action lawsuit. So, it seemed like a good deal for him, because even if he is broke, what they can do with these class actions is put a penalty against future earnings. So, being dropped from the class action removes him from that exposure in the future. That's kind of what happened to O.J. Simpson. He was found not guilty in the criminal court, and then he was found guilty in civil court, and they had a big, multi-million-dollar judgment against him, and he says, hey, I'm broke, I can't pay it. But if he does earn money in the future, then that money or a percentage of that money goes to the civil lawsuit winners, which I think was the parents of the two people that he quote unquote allegedly killed. So, so anyway, there's some comments in that story that talk about how, Konstantin Ignatov was dumb and he made the wrong decision, but I don't agree with that. I think, I think obviously he had a lawyer, and his lawyer probably gave him this advice, and he took it. And I don't see how what he did was a mistake. I think it was a good move, from him personally. And apparently he's going to be sentenced sometime in the relatively near future, in this coronavirus age. In fact, I've been meaning to make this comment in past weeks and months even, Peter, is that you know, we made some predictions at the end of last year or beginning of this year, and I think all those predictions are no good because the coronavirus is just delayed so much out there that, you know, there's just no way the things that we thought would happen during 2020 are going to happen. Everything's getting delayed. And just to give you a couple of examples of that, you know, we've talked about Nexium in the past, and they're going after Frank Parlato, who writes the website frankreport.com, and it's a great website. He's got tons and tons of information on Nexium, which is spelled N-X-I-V-M, and the main character, Keith Raniere, who's now at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn, New York, and for about 3 weeks, some of his followers, they were doing a nightly dance routine in front of the jail, and they cut it back in the last week or two, just once a week. So you have to get there at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time to see the dance, if you want to see the dance. But, you know, it's just kind of a crazy thing. And you know, his sentencing has been delayed. There's no date right now. The only date we do have is for Claire Bronfman. I believe it was end of September was the date that the judge assigned. And, of course, she tried to delay it so that her mom and her sister, her sister is almost as guilty as she is, but she was not prosecuted. They claim that they want to show up at the sentencing hearing. And if I was her sister, I wouldn't step one foot in this country because she could easily be put into custody. There's no known indictment against her, but the government also hasn't tried to go after her. You know, she's been living in France, and I think she's in Portugal now. So, you know, we'll say another quick update is Niora. You know, we had a lawsuit in Illinois and another one in New Jersey, and I saw just recently that the judge decided we're going to move both those lawsuits to where Niora is based, which is, you know, in the Dallas, Texas area. So it's now going to be in the Northern District of Texas for that trial. But again, there's not much else going on as far as the actual trial because of the coronavirus. It's just really slowed things down. And Frank Parlato just got his trial rescheduled for next May. So May of 2021 is when he is supposedly going to get started. So all these things are just pushing out. And, you know, we'll see what happens with all that. But anyway, I'll let you make any comments on any of that, including the OneCoin class action part.
No. Well, you know, we knew that the coronavirus was going to have a horrible situation with the coronavirus, with the delays in trials. The very interesting part is going to be how many of these people tried to get out because of the coronavirus. So we know that there were some people from BitConnect that tried to get out from I think it was BitClub that tried to get out. I don't know. I'm sure that Nexium people try to get out as well. So a lot of people are using the coronavirus as a reason to try to get out of jail. And one of the things I found somewhat fascinating in a different way, when you put me in front of the article about the Forgotten Ones, it's called, it was in that detention center, the MDC, which is the Brooklyn Detention Center, they had locked those people up in those jail cells for something like 23 out of 24 hours because of the coronavirus, and they couldn't see their friends or their relatives or family members or anything else like that. And it was like something like for months. And some people started that Forgotten Ones dance outside the Brooklyn building as a way of just giving them something to look at. Like, just say, hey, we can't come see you, but you mean something to us. So I think it started off, it was pretty interesting in a humanitarian way for other people. And then I do believe probably the Nexium people kind of said, oh, this is a great way for Keith Raniere to be able to see us as well, and kind of put the poison or the rotten apple in the bucket. So I thought it was really interesting. to see and shine a spotlight on what was going on with their prisoners because of coronavirus as well. But obviously it was tainted by the NXIVM people in a weird way. You know, maybe some of these people were his sex slaves dancing in front of his window, which is kind of weird and perverse in an awkward way. So that's the only thing I wanted to just kind of comment about that. Because I know people that are in the detention center for, I think, the wrong reasons. People like Martin Sciarelli was thrown in there because he made an alleged attack on Hillary Clinton. They basically said, hey, if somebody can give me a flock of her hair or whatever, a clipping of her hair, I'll be able to tell you what's wrong with her. I'll give you $5,000 for every clip of her hair you can find. They put him in jail. They revoked his bail, and they put him in that jail. That would be a pretty hard penalty to pay for just being a jerk. So having said that, there we go, Scott. Back to you.
Yeah, I mean, he was going to be sentenced anyway, but they did put him in jail early.
Hard time.
Because Yeah. He's, what did he get, like 7 years or something like that? I think that was
7 years.
Farmer Bros. Yeah. Well, he wasn't convicted of the Farmer Bro, you know, the jacking up the price of the drug, you know, that he bought the rights to, and then he jacked it up like, I don't remember, 1,000% or something. But he was doing something else behind the scenes with moving company money around between companies, and that's really what he got nailed for.
He got nailed for running a kind of a Ponzi scheme. He had paid off previous investors with profits from a new company. So the previous investments previous investors who were losing money, he paid off with the profits from a company that he was making money with, and they didn't think that was legal. Well, it's not legal, but he was doing it. So in essence, he is in jail from a victimless crime. The people never lost any money. Matter of fact, many of them said it was the best investment they ever made. Under oath, they had to admit to it. But it was the way that he did it. So, however, it's kind of like, you know, if you're playing basketball, I'm going to use a horrible example. If you're playing basketball, just because you double dribble, if you still get a 50-footer, you know, like as a free throw or a three-pointer, hey, what the hell, who cares if you double dribble? Do you travel a little bit? Look at the throw you made. They threw him out because of the double dribble or the penalty that he made, or may traveled a little bit, you know, dragged his feet. That's what they put him in jail for, 7 years. And he should have been in like a country club prison, he thought. But because he pissed off somebody that liked Hillary Clinton, they put him in one of the roughest prisons in the country, certainly in New York, the MDC over in Brooklyn. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, that's a nasty prison, very bad conditions. In fact, those prisoners can't even see their lawyers for several months.
Nope.
So, yeah, the whole justice system has really been stopped up. And, of course, you know, the good thing about going after him is it could have developed into a Bernie Madoff type situation, you know, because I don't think Bernie had this grand scheme originally. He just kind of started doing the Ponzi thing with his investors and thinking he could, you know, work his way out of it. But then it got out of control. You know, it got to be so much bigger than what he could manage. And then he just decided to keep doing it because he couldn't, you know, he couldn't see a way out, and he didn't want to turn himself in until the economy crashed, of course, back in 2008. And then he was exposed because people were asking for their money back, and guess what? He didn't have it because there wasn't enough real money that was being paid in. He was just making up money, literally. And, you know, people thought they were doing well, and they weren't. So, you know, that's a pretty serious thing when you take lots of people's life savings, you know, and they entrusted him because he used to be, you know, the head of NASDAQ or, you know, one of the big trading platforms. And so there was a lot of trust in him for a long time. And, you know, he got sentenced to 150 years. So he's not getting out alive. Although, you know, I haven't really checked. I don't think he's asked to get out early because of the coronavirus. I think he's been sentenced for such a long time that you know, they're just going to leave him there, you know, until he's dead. So
I think what's happening with him is what happens with many people, is they get sick and then they're on their death's bed. And then eventually the court says, listen, even though you're you did horrible things, we'll let you die at home. I think that's what he solicited to have happen with him. But the judge said, no, you're dying in prison. So with other people, they've allowed them to come home to allegedly die. But with Bernie Madoff, the judge said, nope, sorry, not you. You're staying.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think what they're doing with a lot of the prisoners, if they're, you know, if it's a nonviolent crime and they're older and they're near the end of their sentence, those are all factors for letting them, you know, finish out their time at home. But yeah, his was such an egregious crime, you know, billions and billions with a B, as in boy, dollars, that, you know, the judge would be given a hard time if he let him out of prison, basically, is how I look at it. And you know, there was a judge recently, gosh, where was that? Was it in California, I think? There was a lawyer that got upset with her, and I don't remember the exact case that he was upset with, but he knocked on her front door. This is a couple weeks ago. A federal judge knocked on her door. Her son answered the door. He was shot dead. And then her husband was shot. I believe he's still in the hospital. He's alive, but he's in the hospital, you know, a couple weeks after. So I don't know exactly what his injuries are, but it's, you know, not a flesh wound for sure. And she just happened to be like in the basement or something. And then this lawyer, you know, left the home and shot himself. So, you know, we don't really know the full story. You know, people are trying to piece together what cases that he had with her to see what could have caused that kind of reaction. But, you know, people do weird things when, you know, when judges act different than they wish they had acted. And so there's a little bit of self-preservation there too. You know, whether it's physical harm or just reputational harm, not letting these really bad guys go.
Well, the interesting thing about that one is I think her last name is Salas, and she just picked up a case related to Jeffrey Epstein, I believe. So there's obviously a lot of conspiracies that that's why she was going to be killed. But it wound up, according to one theory, that the lawyer had a beef with her and was diagnosed with cancer, so knew he was dying. So he knew he was dying, and he basically had a bucket list of these are the people I want to take out before I die. So while he was still healthy enough to be able to pull a trigger, that's why he went after her. And it's a shame that the son answered the door, and it's a shame that the dad was right behind it. I think those were, I don't know enough to say anything sincerely, like I really know, but I think that if she would have answered the door, the guy would have had, you know, been able to check off his bucket list. But he just popped anybody that showed up at the door, and unfortunately it was the son and the dad. But he was really going after her based on a previous decision that she had made, and he and she was on his bucket list of, hey, these are the people I'm going to take out when I find out that I'm going to die. So all sad.
I hadn't heard the cancer angle. That's interesting.
Yeah, he had a whole bunch of people that he had on his bucket list. And I think he took out one of them as well beforehand. So he was a repeat offender of this make-believe I'm the FedEx guy, pop him when they answer the door. And then I think he had gotten two of them. And then I don't know why he killed himself after what he did, but who can't, you know, when people in that state of mind, you know, they're mental. Like, you can't think of anything they're thinking about. Who knows what the hell was going on. But sad for the 20-year-old kid, for sure. And the dad, obviously. Sad for everybody. A lot of victims. Sad things.
Yeah, and she was in the media recently saying, you know, there's just too much information out there on the internet about judges. It's just too easy to find us. You know, we need to improve on that, you know, and I certainly have some sympathy in that regard for that opinion, because almost any time, you know, there's a trial, one side is going to be very disappointed. and there's going to be hard feelings. That's just, you know, that's just human nature. So, okay, well, let me move on. There was an interesting story here. I don't think we've talked about this company before, but what I was surprised by was it was from Europe, and they actually sent some people to prison. So I'm going to bring it up. It's August 6, 2020, and the headline is Flexcom Scammers Convicted in Belgium. You know, you hardly ever hear about, you know, in Europe, these guys being, especially individuals being sentenced to prison. One of them got 30 months and the other one 40 months which I think it's a pretty, you know, pretty nice prison. It's kind of a luxury prison compared to MDC, for example, in New York City. But still, they're going to be in there for however long it is. I don't know what the, you know, what the practice is in Europe as far as getting out early, but they were fined, you know, money as well. Something like, almost a half a million euros was seized, but then they were also fined 6,000 euros and 18,000 euros, which is, you know, roughly $8,000 and $20,000, which, you know, to me is pretty much chump change. You know, when you're talking about a major scammer like this, you would think the fine would be much higher. But anyway, it was just good news coming from Europe for a change, that because we just talked about the UK being kind of soft, you know, dropping the case against OneCoin. In fact, I think it was just a few months ago, maybe 2 or 3 months ago, where the UK completely dropped the case against OneCoin. They said, we're not going to do anything more. You know, they made an announcement. and I guess they're just allowing the United States to take the lead to go after these characters. Anything more on that one?
Nope. Good to go.
All right. Let me. And by the way, we're not covering all the stories. There's a lot of stories on here that we're just blowing past because there's a lot of cryptocurrency stuff, and it gets pretty redundant. Actually, they're all doing about the same thing. But you know, when you have people out there who've never heard of this, it sounds good, and they don't need everybody to get involved. They just need a certain percentage. You know, maybe 1 or 2%. And if you you know, it's a numbers game like any other legitimate sales organization. It's a numbers game. You have to go through numbers to get a percentage, you know, that's going to pay attention, and then a certain percentage of those are going to get involved. And so you're just going through the numbers. You're not really, you know, trying to create something that's going to attract 100% of the people. That's really not the goal. And so these, you know, cryptocurrency MLMs particularly, you know, when we read them, we know what is going on because, you know, we've been reading about this for years. But if it's someone brand new has never heard of this, then it looks good. So and here's one you mentioned earlier, Peter. August 4th, 2020, New Age Beverages gobbles up Rx and its acquisitions. So is it Rx or Eryx?
Rx.
Rx, okay. And certainly that's our friend Tim Sales. He's a big Rx guy. And he's probably involved in this whole acquisition thing too, because he makes a big point on his videos that, you know, that he's been trading in stocks for the past several years, even though he's a full-time MLMer and got me involved in Rx recently. And just as a side note, I happened to look at his channel recently, and he's really criticizing one of the female YouTubers and her criticism of MLMs. He was really raking her over the coals. Now, I don't think he had too many facts on his side, and he has many, many less viewers. I think the main source of his anger is that, you know, he gets maybe 1,000 or 2 viewers of his videos, and she gets hundreds of thousands. So I think there's a little bit of jealousy there involved. But apparently his New Age Beverages bought up Rx and some other companies, as well as all the companies that Rx has been acquiring over the past couple years. So I guess that name's going to go away and it's going to become New Age Beverages. So any more comment on that one?
Yeah, there was And a couple of questions some of my customers asked about RX, and they were talking about RX going through an IPO. So that's usually where they're trying to raise some money. And then all of a sudden this happened, what you just said. So there was something that must have made a drastic change. They were trying to go basically public as RX, and for whatever reason, they switched gears, and then they were gobbled up by this other company, and it seemed probably to be absorbed by this other company. And I know Tim, so Tim probably has his fingerprints and his approval all over the place relative to how this was done. So he's not going to be just standing by as a regular distributor. He was probably a master distributor with RX to begin with, so none of this stuff, I'm sure, happened without him orchestrating a portion of it. And by the way, he's a smart guy, so that was not a bad thing. So he probably did it in the company's best interest and his best interest as well. But it looked like they also gobbled up a few other smaller companies as well. So I don't know anything about New Age, the beverage, or anything else, but it's I guess a sign of the times to come, how the smaller, I'm going to say perceived weaker companies are going to probably be absorbed because they're not, you know, making it work right now because of the whole coronavirus thing or anything else that might be happening with the economic influxes that are happening in the world today. So we're going to see more of these things, I believe. But I'm sure there's some people with RX that are going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, no doubt. And you're probably right. They probably got a better deal, you know, a better offer from that new beverage versus what they could get on the, you know, open market with a IPO, initial public offering. So they also went after, I'm reading a story here, they also went after Zenoa, Limu, Mavi, and Asante. That's who RX had previously gone after. So now they're all going to be under the New Age Beverage umbrella. I don't know if they're going to keep their other brand names or not. We'll have to just see what happens going forward. I know when that's happened in the past, they typically keep the brand name of the companies that they acquire just because it's, you know, recognizable and so forth. So we'll see. They may want to change it for, like we talked, reasons we talked about earlier. So stay tuned. We'll see what happens. Let's see. I'm just kind of scrolling down through, like I say, a bunch of stories that are all pretty much the same.
I'll mention one while you're looking. Herbalife. I'll mention like it just a headline. Herbalife had their earnings call, which I wasn't on, but on their earnings call, I read a little bit about it that they had year-to-date pluses, and that was a big thing. So they always beat their what they call their guidance or their expectations. So they've done it again with Herbalife. So may not necessarily have been hard to do because they're plussing over minuses, which isn't really hard to do. But again, in a pandemic, I think all bets are off because there's probably a lot of challenges with a lot of different things. And whatever's going on with Herbalife and China is probably questionable at best as well. So they, all I know is that their stock probably went up because their earnings went up as well. But I'll just mention that just as a matter of just news. I haven't read that much into it.
Good.
I don't know that much about the details, but there you go.
Yeah, that's good to understand, Peter. So did they actually grow or did they just meet their projections, which projected a little bit less volume?
They always do it. So whatever they project, they always beat. So they're really good at the smoke and mirrors perception. But they did have healthy numbers. I think it was like $1.26 billion in sales, their version of sales, their definition of sales, this quarter. And that's a big number because, you know, you multiply that out, that's $5 billion. That's a pretty big number in sales. So I don't know all the details. I wasn't on the earnings call, but I just figured I would mention it because they are, you know, quote-unquote doing well. But you have to remember that they're doing well over probably minus numbers. So it's not hard to plus when the last year was dismal. So back to you.
Yeah, and I think that's about where they've been for the past, let's say, 2 or 3 years is in that $5 billion area. So, you know, they're at least treading water, which is, like you say, you know, that's commendable with the coronavirus.
A big number.
Yeah.
If the retail sales number is a real number, or you say, well, how do they get the retail sales number? And you'd say, oh, well, that's derived from, and like, really? Oh, that's not a number. That's like the unemployment number when Donald Trump mentions, well, unemployment is whatever, or new jobs or whatever. And you'd say, I really need a clearer definition of what that unemployment number is. So if unemployment is that somebody's working 1 hour a week and now you don't consider them unemployed, holy crap. That's a little bit of a manipulation saying the unemployment numbers are getting better. So you got to look at the numbers. I'm not sure if Herbalife plays those political numbers the way they do. I'm going to say they probably do. So it might be $5 billion, but I'm going to say probably more like potato chip bag numbers, like if you've ever opened up a potato chip bag, kind of puffed up and real big and probably pretty colored, but as soon as you pop it open, you say, what the hell are the potato chips? Like, what the hell? They settle down to a quarter of the bag. I think Herbalife does potato chip numbers. Back to you.
Yeah, and you know, whether it's Herbalife or virtually any MLM company, even the DSA, right, the Direct Selling Association, they often refer to retail sales, but they're not really sales to non-distributor customers. It's really the amount that the company sold to their distributors. Now, where does it go from there? Hardly anybody knows. You know, in most MLMs, most of that is either consumed by the distributor or it's in their garage to be consumed in future years or thrown away or, you know, put on eBay for pennies on the dollar or whatever. But as far as legitimate retail sales to non-distributors, you know, which is the definition of a legitimate MLM versus a illegal pyramid, typically it doesn't happen. And I know that Herbalife is under a, you know, 7-year audit to show that they are making retail sales, and, you know, they can certainly do more smoke and mirrors with the auditor. And so even that we don't really know, because these people are pretty good at lying. So it's
right. And the 7-year audit doesn't get publicly known. The 7-year audit just gets reported to the courts, and you'd say, okay. So, like, what's the purpose of an audit?
Yeah. In fact, there was a request, a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act, FOIA, that was made by, I think it was Tina.org made that request. And so Herbalife said, well, we need to redact some things. And if you look at the report, this is probably 2 or 3 years ago now, the initial report that came out, I mean, it was literally almost completely redacted. I mean, the only thing that was in there was like the section headings, but everything else, I mean, the CIA would be proud of that redaction as far as it's more redacted than anything I've ever seen come out of the government, you know, when they release redacted. It's just amazing how it's just, I mean, you need to be in the black toner business, you know, you'd be wealthy. It was ridiculous, the amount that was redacted, and they said, well, this is, you know, competitive information, and, you know, I guess they had a legal argument, but, you know, as far as the usefulness of that report to the public, it's not. There's just no information in there that would help you as a prospective distributor or a current distributor tell anything as far as, you know, does this look like a good deal or not, because there's just literally nothing in there that would give you any information at all, except, again, the heading of the sections, which, you know, that was kind of defined by the court order. And so there's literally nothing new. It's amazing how they got away with that. But they have high-priced lawyers, so, that, you know, you can buy justice in this country, no doubt about it. Anything more on that one? I'll move on.
Nope.
Our friends at Telex Free, August 1st, 2020, headline, Telex Free victims receive early recovery distribution payments. So I guess they got some good news here. They got, you know, some of their payments that had a deadline of January 13th of next year. They're starting to get some of that money before that deadline. So kind of good news, I think, as far as people that lost money. I didn't see too much else in there. Peter, did you see anything else you wanted to comment on?
Not so much Alex Free, but it's been taking a long time. It's been a long time. 8 years. 8 years.
Yeah.
Holy crap. People have died.
Imagine how many,
in those 8 years.
Yeah, I was gonna say, imagine how many people have died or gone bankrupt or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's an old saying, justice delayed is justice denied, but we see it all the time. It takes years and years and years. You know, our thumbnail, you know, sort of guidance is when the new story comes out, don't expect anything for 5 years. It's going to be between 5 and 10 years that it gets resolved. So don't get too excited when you see a new story that somebody sued somebody. Because it's just not going to happen in anything less than about half a decade to a decade or more to get, you know, total resolution. It's really amazing. There are exceptions to that, but way too many that take a long time. Let's see here. July 30th, 2020, Jay Nolan unlikely to get enhanced capital funding funds. So apparently Jay put some money aside into another company, and he wanted to use that money to fund his legal efforts, against the FTC. And the FTC said no. And the judge hasn't, I don't think, made a decision on this, but it doesn't look good for him to get access to that money. I know he was trying to raise money, and I think he did raise some money, maybe over $100,000, something like that.
Yeah, I know a little bit more about that one. Yeah, I can comment on that
one. Yeah, go ahead.
So Jay Nolan is the president or the owner of Success by Health, SBH. And if you go to sbhowners.com, you can see some of the videos that they posted. Right now, so this is kind of inside scoop news. So literally today, what they did with Jay Nolan was they basically froze his assets. And with SBH, because they thought he was running a pyramid scheme or whatever allegations as far as retail. And most of those complaints that they have from the FTC were generated by a guy named Luke Curry. I don't mind mentioning his name because it's all in the core reports and it's public information. Luke Curry allegedly had an affair with Jay's secretary, and then he got bitter. And they wound up saying, we're going to take you down, Jay. So they had a whole bunch of people complain from Luke Curry's downline to the FTC, and that's what prompted this hailstorm of bank accounts being shut down by Jay Nolan. Well, they shut down almost everything they could from Jay Nolan to try to get the money back because now they have to, quote-unquote, you know, refund the ill-gotten gains. Well, they're reaching into businesses that might have had nothing to do with SBH, and that's that thing that you're referencing over here. So they froze all of his assets, like all of his assets, and his wife's assets and two other distributors. So it's kind of like reach, overreach. You know, I'm not close enough to it to understand any of that sort of stuff, but it's aggressive. Let's say the government is being very aggressive. Well, right now, literally probably even today, they are on their way with their attorney to depose all those people that complained to the FTC. So under oath, they're going to have to explain their motivation on why they complained. So literally, Jay Nolan and his lawyer, they got, I hate to say it, I'm going to say it the wrong way, they got some chutzpah. I'll use a nice word that most people might not understand, but they got some balls, and they're going for it. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen here, because what might happen, Scott, is the judge who signed off on the temporary restraining order is going to probably look a little silly that if they throw 30 depositions on the judge's lap and said, this guy did it because he was coached by Luke Curry to how to do it. And this guy did the same thing, and this guy did the same thing, and this guy said, well, I didn't realize what I was doing. And this guy did, and this 30 of them, because the attorney, Darrell Williams, I think his name is pretty dynamic. I think he can kind of go into the showmanship role. If they go back to that judge who did the TRO, that judge is probably going to be pretty pissed off at the FTC saying, we did this based on this, who's been doing these investigations? So it might actually be one of these things where it's going to be interesting to watch for sure. And the only reason why I say I get a little bit of the inside scoop, full disclosure, is I do a radio show with Jody Bear, and Jody Bear is one of the leading distributors for Success by Health, and she's part of this whole thing. So she's been turned upside down by the subpoena process, so has everybody else, and now they're kind of reversing the roles and saying, okay, let's go after, and when I say go after, let's take a look at these people that file these complaints and find out their real motivation. Were they motivated by the right reason, or were they motivated by the wrong reason? We're going to find out. So it's interesting. This is behind-the-scenes stuff that nobody would know. And I wouldn't know either if I didn't have an inside scoop. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, good information, Peter. Like you said, it's literally hot off the press. And I think they brought up this argument before, you know, before the depositions, and the judge, you know, kind of poo-pooed it. But it will be interesting when they give all those depositions under oath, and, you know, and they have to talk about the motivation. To me, what's key is whether the FTC, you know, just sort of believed them when they complained, or they went in and, you know, did their own research and confirmed the complaints. Because to me, if the complaints were factual, the motivation is not as important as, you know, were they doing things wrong, whatever that means. That probably will win the day if the FTC, you know, did their due diligence and really investigated all these accusations to confirm them. But we'll see. Like we said, you know, judges don't want to be made to look foolish, so they're humans too. So it'll be interesting to see what goes on. You don't have any kind of a time frame for the depositions or anything, I would assume, right?
I'm probably saying more things than I'm supposed to, but I was literally on the phone with Jay Nolan yesterday, and he was on his way to Kentucky, which is where these things are, so to do these depositions. So those depositions are probably going to be done this week.
Okay, yeah. And then we don't know how long it's going to take for the, you know, depositions to be filed, and then for the, you know, give the FTC a chance to make their arguments, and then the judge takes his sweet time with the coronavirus. So, you know, again, we're not talking about week after next year, probably.
Yeah. And one of the
reasons, people's time expectations.
And just for people wondering why was I on the phone, there's a problem with censorship here in the United States, as we know, whereas you can't talk about different things in the government, or the government and or social media places are shutting people down when they have anything that really needs to be spoken about. So whether it's about vaccines or coronavirus or their political stances or whatever. Well, there's a gentleman that I've worked with before that we've done radio shows with, doesn't matter who it is, but he had an overreach based on the government. They basically tried to destroy him and his business based on government overreach. And it was pretty well confirmed that it was government overreach. So I had a conversation about this because let's take it on face value. What if this is the vengeance of a disgruntled distributor that can interfere with the livelihood of a business? That's kind of like false accusations, Scott, can get a guy's account shut off, people's checks withheld, really disrupt people, and that's just wrong. So that's the government has to be held accountable for that, and that's one of the reasons why I was on the radio show, well, I was on the phone, and the only reason why I know this information. So there's a couple of things. Number one, we do radio shows with Jody Bear. Number two, I'm coordinating having this story be told, because there's a lot of stories just like this where people are put into jail unjustly or treated unfairly, and if they hide in the darkness, somebody's got to shine a spotlight on them, and that's the sort of thing that I've done. I've shined a spotlight on a couple of different things. We've done it with a few different people related to this industry and some not even related to this industry as well. That's kind of like the stuff that is the stuff that I've always kind of done for a really long time, by the way. So anyway, so that's the connection why that might happen. It was coincidental that we're bringing this up on this call that it just happened yesterday. I was on the phone with him, and I know the depositions are happening this coming week. So back to you, Scott.
Well, I certainly don't view the government as a band of little angels. There's no doubt about that.
No way.
Too many examples out there where they entrap people and, you know, they go to the extreme. It really, to me, it undermines their credibility so that when something comes up, raise the hairy eyeball.
Look what they did to Donald Trump. You know, they've been trying to impeach the guy. Look what they did to Roger Stone. You know, not necessarily a saint, but geez, Roger Stone shouldn't have been in jail. Roger Stone, the only reason why Roger Stone was going to go to jail is because he was a friend of Donald Trump. Paul Manafort, probably the same way. Michael Kelly, probably the same way. You know, Michael Cohen,
yep.
Probably the same way. You know,
Michael Cohen.
It's a shame. Yeah. It's destroying people's lives.
Yeah, it is.
It's back to you. Sorry.
That's good examples. And that kind of makes you just disgusted with the government, you know, whether it's Republican or Democrat or, you know, prosecutors or judges. I'm still scratching my head on all these judges that approved all these different investigations, you know, not questioning the prosecutors enough to see if, you know, what they were saying actually had a foundation to it or not. And, because you're right, it destroys people's lives, and they really don't care. I mean, bottom line, they don't care, because you can't go back after them usually, and so, you know, they're bulletproof, and they just don't care. And
they're above the law.
Not the right kind of people. It's not the right kind of people you want in those positions. But you know, to me, it kind of attracts those kinds of people to those positions because they could be making so much more money as lawyers, but for some reason they become judges. And I think some of them do it for the right reasons, but I think far too many of them do it for the wrong reasons, just for the raw power and the ability to ruin someone's life and not care. You know, that's just part of the makeup, and it's certainly part of the legal approach. You know, there's no real good or bad in the legal world. There's just your argument versus someone else's argument. And then a decision has to be made. So, you know, there's very little good and evil and ethical and unethical. It's really more of a sterile environment, in my opinion. It really doesn't care about people. It just cares about the process. And even then, it doesn't really care about justice. So, anyway, we could rant on that all evening for sure.
Yep.
So the next one here, it's just one of many stories, but it kind of got my attention, Peter. From the standpoint of the whole shtick, and it's July 27th, 2020, and the headline is Crypto Mining Review, 48-month daily returns Ponzi. So it's just one of many. But what really picked me up on this story, I just started skimming it, and apparently the CEO, his name is Morgan Finch, and it says he's worked with numerous brands from Fortune 500 companies to reputable startups, including Google, Microsoft, Sony, NFL, NYU, P&G, Fleet Bank, and NASA. And it says, oh, he's also, he has columns in Forbes and Entrepreneur and New York Times and American Express and all these different things. He's made numerous media appearances from Bloomberg, Reuters, ABC News, and CNN. And guess what? It's all made up.
Yep.
even the guy doesn't exist.
Wow.
So, again, you know, when they put all these really incredible things, it kind of reminds me of Ruja, right? I mean, actually, she had a legitimate background. You know, she was some kind of a really smart person in finance.
She was a smart person.
And actually worked for She really worked for a legitimate company. I can't remember which one, but I mean, she really was real. But this guy is just made up out of thin air. He doesn't even exist. But when people read this, they're impressed.
By the way, if a guy was a woman, he was a pretty one. You know, you look at the page, you just say, this guy's a pretty man, like a pretty man.
Yeah, he's a pretty boy.
Yeah, he's pretty. You just say, okay, so let me see if I got this. All these credentials, and he looks like that too? Too good to be true. Like, really, seriously, come on. Like,
at least make a buck of me.
Yeah. At least make me, yeah. I mean, he can't be this. And he's young. Like, how the hell could you be doing all these things and be young and be pretty?
Yeah,
like, come on.
He's way too young. He's way too young with that resume. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So just a word to the wise. I mean, you know, we have the internet now, folks. You know, there's really no excuse to be fooled by something like that because it's something you can very easily verify. You know, plug the guy's name in and do a Google search and, you know, see if all these claims can be backed up. Yeah, it's really a shame that people do get suckered in. But, you know, we've talked to recent guests within the last few months that said, I'm really kicking myself. I should have, you know, gone on the internet and checked out Amway better. But, you know, I just got caught up in it and decided not to. And they told me I was going to find negative things like you can find for any company anyway. And so I didn't do it, or I did it, and it just did confirmation bias. You know, I found some bad stuff like they told me I would find. So, you know, now the crooks are even more believable because I found the bad stuff that they told me I would find. You know, so in a kind of a twisted logic, you know, they became credible. So just, you know, be careful, be careful. Anything more on that one, Peter, besides the pretty boy?
Nope.
That was a very good guy.
As soon as I said him, I'm like, you know, this guy's too pretty to be, like, real.
That was a really good point. I mean, in addition to all those things, he was way too young and just way too good looking. But, hey, if you're going to make something up, you know, go all
might
out.
Might as well.
Right?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, don't put a fugly person there.
Yeah, don't go halfway. Go for it. So July 27th, 2020, QNET human trafficking recruitment ring busted in Liberia. Did we talk about this? I'm trying to remember.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think we did. This was a, if I'm thinking about the same one, it was a guy that, is this the one where he kidnapped the guy? Or is that a different story? I'm kind of reading as I'm talking.
It was a OneCoin person that was kidnapped.
That's right. That was a different story. Yeah.
We were talking amongst ourselves with Dave, with the one guy that was the African guy that decided he was going to take hostages. And it might have been I don't remember who. I don't remember what the network marketing company was. But it was
right.
That was a different story.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, there's this human trafficking thing, and QNET has a very bad reputation online also. I really don't understand why they haven't been at least prosecuted. You know, you hear all these different companies putting out warnings, which, again, nobody sees that. I mean, when I say nobody, I mean a very, very small percentage of people would ever see a regulatory warning about a company. It just, you know, I don't know what these regulators are thinking. Like, you know, everyone checks their website for warnings all the time. You know, they need to prosecute. They can't just put out warnings, in my opinion, of course. So let me see. Let me go. Oh, here's an interesting one. July 26, 2020, Gilbert Armenta's OneCoin fraud indictment. So this guy apparently was indicted about 3 years ago. And then he apparently was cooperating. But then it was found that he really wasn't cooperating. And so the DOJ said, you know that deal we had? Well, it was predicated on you continuing to act straight and tell us everything you know. Well, guess what? He was actually operating another scam as he was giving them testimony about the OneCoin scam. And so the government said, guess what? Deal's off. You signed the deal. And it was right in the deal. And so, and he wants to go to prison sooner than later. He's tired of being holed up in his house. He spent several months, I think it was MCC in New York. I think it was in New York. It's very similar to MDC. They're not too far from each other. And both of them are pretty squalid. It's where Epstein allegedly committed suicide, or someone suicided him, and not a pleasant place to be. But this guy wants to get it over. He says, I'm tired of being holed up in my house. Please sentence me. I want to go to prison so I can get out of prison. And the government said, nah, we're going to, you know, the DOJ said, no, we don't want to do it right away. And I think the judge has bought into that. I think the judge said, yeah, we're not going to do it right away. We're going to drag our feet. Because, you know, when you're under home or house arrest, that does not count towards your prison time. If you're in prison, like Keith Raniere is right now, he's been in there for over 2 years in jail. That time counts against his sentencing, you know, day by day. Now, I think it's going to be like 20 or 30 years minimum that Ranieri's going to get. So it doesn't matter too much. He's only been there 2 years. I don't know how much this guy is going to be sentenced, but, you know, let's say it's 5 years. He wants to get it over. He wants to say, you know, I'm tired of being cooped up in my house, and aren't we all with the coronavirus?
Right.
A little bit less than we were a couple months ago, but, you know, we're all kind of in that boat to some extent. But he wants to go to prison. He wants to get out of prison. That's pretty clear, you know, when you read this this story. But the government is kind of saying, nah, we're going to drag this out. So that's kind of where it's going right now. Anything more on that one?
I don't remember, and I hope I got my name right. I think he was, to use an Austin Powers term, I think he was shagging Dr. Ruja, if I recall.
Yes.
From a previous...
You are correct.
From a previous thing.
He's at least alleged to do that, yes.
So, and I think the fun part of this drama was she wound up renting an apartment above his to catch him shagging somebody else or something. I don't remember what it was. But there's a lot of drama associated with this. And before I forget, Scott, when I was listening to the OneCoin guys, I think they said the BBC was still doing those audio podcasts. So we got to check up on that because they stopped for a while. But I think I heard that they're up to 8. So I'm not sure, but we got to check up on that because that's where you can find some of this real juicy stuff on OneCoin and the wonderful things that have happened with those people. So anyway, so back to you.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe they are putting out new episodes. When I read it, I kind of assumed it was just old news, but that is worth checking on. Maybe they're updating it. We'll see. Oh, by the way, there's going to be a – speaking of, you know, public shows, there's going to be an HBO series about Nexium. And what's really interesting about it is – one of the, I think it's the producers, I can't remember, producer, writer, director, one of those people that's involved with the HBO series, and it's going to be like a 7 or 8 part series starting in late August. But she actually took a Nexium course back in like 2010, and that's as far as she went, but she was exposed to it. And then when Frank Parlato kind of exposed the branding thing back in 2017, she started following it again very closely. I think even, you know, doing filming of different people, even before, you know, Ranieri fled to Mexico and before he was arrested and brought back to the United States, you know, before the trial and all that stuff, she was actually making film, not knowing how it would turn out. But because she had been involved in Nexium as a student, you know, for one class, apparently, probably a 5-day class, that she was just curious, you know. And so she probably has some really interesting footage in that HBO series that's going to be coming out. I think it's like August 23rd is when it starts. So I think it's like one episode per week. I think it's like Sunday night at 11 Eastern time, if I'm not mistaken, but you can find it pretty easy, you know, HBO, Nexium, that kind of thing.
Might be worth the subscription.
So, yeah.
Might be worth the subscription to HBO.
Yeah, yeah. So the next story is one you mentioned earlier, July 25th, 2020, Jason Cardiff incarcerated if August 21st deadline not met. That's the actual story that talks about you got to give up the goods or else, you know, you're going to prison until you produce the materials. Anything more on that one? I'll move on.
Nope, you can move on.
So the next one here, I think we've been talking about this a little bit over the past few months or maybe a year or two, involving Payza. July 25th, 2020 story. Headline is Payza co-founders plead guilty to money laundering. So this is one of those payment companies, apparently, and they pled guilty to money laundering. So there's going to be some sentencing here somewhere down the road, I guess. So apparently the government had plenty of evidence, and they said, you know, it's not worth going through a trial. Let's just plead guilty. Maybe we can get a little bit of leniency if we just give up the ghost. But I think they had been resisting that for some time, you know, before it was actually finalized.
And it might be going away for a long time, or maybe threatened to go away for a long time. The people from like Liberty Reserve and a few other things, they went away for like 100 years. So they were probably heavy-handed as far as this anti-money laundering. When they want to do something like this, they're not light sentences. So that's probably why they pled guilty. And they probably pled guilty, but they'll probably still do a significant amount of time.
Yeah, just less than they would have otherwise, probably.
Right.
Yep. They even may have made some kind of an informal deal. You know, we don't know. All that kind of goes on behind closed doors. So, you know, either a formal deal or an informal one. But usually that's something that, you know, the prosecution can recommend to the judge. And the judge can either take it or reject it and make his own decision or her own decision on what the punishment's going to be, especially on the federal level. You know, I think on the federal level, that's judges making the sentencing, whereas in many states, I think even most states, the jury decides what the sentence is going to be. So a little difference there between state and federal. Next one here, June 20th, 2020, Crowd One permanently banned in Philippines, appeal denied. So it looks like the Philippines got fed up with Crowd One. And I don't know what that means, you know, when you permanently banned, because, you know, OneCoin has been permanently banned in many countries around the world, but I think they're still operating there. So, you know, what does that really mean? Who knows? Anything more on that one?
Nope.
I guess that's I'll do one more here just because it's that Jason Cardiff guy with Renga Life. July 18th, 2020, Jason Cardiff furious over losing BPL Medical. That was the face mask thing. And he put in a 28-page, or his lawyer did, 28-page, it says, rage filing demanding removal of the receiver, which, you know, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, Peter, there's some more. Oh, I got to do one more. I just went to the top of page six. One of my favorite guys here, Phil Piccolo. July 17th, 2020, the Vista Network Piccolo legal saga is not over. Because we did do a story, I think, a couple months ago saying, well, they all settled out of court. Well, apparently this Piccolo fella went to a different state or a different court and sued them. And so there's still a lawsuit out there flopping around. And he kind of did an end around, it looks like, on this Vista company. And who knows how it's going to turn out again. But you remember, he's the guy, this Phil Piccolo. I talked to him years ago now because he was in the Amway, and I was able to get his contact information. He said, oh, yeah, back in the 70s, we were making multiple times more on tools than we were on Amway. And that's the earliest, you know, confirmed indication that the Amway tool scam goes back at least into the 1970s. It might even go back to the 60s. I just haven't found any, you know, concrete evidence of that. So I had to bring up old Phil Piccolo because he had no qualms about making all that money. I mean, he had no sort of guilt. He had no, you know, ethical problems. Talking to me about that, it was just like, oh yeah, I made all that money, and yeah, that was me. And he didn't see anything wrong with, you know, hiding that from his downline. It was just incredible, you know, I didn't really go after him because I thought, well, maybe I want to talk to the guy again in the future about something. And I didn't say, you know, you realize you're a real scam artist. I think he probably knows it anyway. So anyway, I'll let that be my last one here, Peter. If you had anything else, go ahead, or if you want to just close it up.
We covered a lot of information. So for those people that want to hear more from the websites that you have, they can go to give them your three.
Yeah, it's stoptheamwaytoolscam.wordpress.com, allmlmfacts.org, and amwayukblog.wordpress.com. That's the three. I should say one more OneCoin. We got to get another OneCoin in here, Peter. July 13, 2020, OneCoin promoter murdered in Mexico. Apparently there was two of them. They were both stuffed into suitcases, dumped in a vacant lot. So there's your message of the week.
No wonder the UK authorities kind of backed off, if you know what I mean. So having said all those things, we're going to catch you guys next time on Building Fortunes Radio. Check them out. You go to buildingfortunesradio.com/Scott-Johnson. So buildingfortuneradio.com/Scott-Johnson. You'll be able to hear the previous radio shows that we've done. Going to catch everybody next week. Thank you, guys, everybody. Have a good day.
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.